It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 15th day of October 2020. This is almost the, well, you know, those 31-day months that are kind of complicated. This is or isn't the halfway mark of the month of October. And, well, but it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And, hey, look, we just buffered up in the show. Well, let's see if this crap settles down. Looks like, yeah, okay, so maybe we're streaming, maybe, I don't know. That's a hell of a way to start the program. Damn it. Okay, well, we'll just see how it plays out. Anyway, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is no different. So thanks go out to our 15th day of the month subscribers. And in particular, that means today, thanks go out to Robert. Thank you, Robert. Thank you to Nagla. Thank you to Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you very much, all three of you, our 15th day of the month subscribers. And thank you. Thank you to Lane, a brand new contributor. Thank you, Lane, for jumping in and getting us started here today for this Thursday. So that means we got $195 to raise because Lane got us started. Thank you very kindly. And thanks to Jeremy in Vermont jumping in as well. So that makes $190. $190 and we're done, and $390 is the week. So that's where everything is. Much appreciated. Thank you, one and all. That's how we keep the program on the air, plain and simple. Because you know the drill. There's no buy gold now ads or any of that silly shit going on. It is simply the determination of this community that this program continue to exist. Did I do the hi, I'm Bob? Yeah, hi, I'm Bob. And before anybody asks, yeah, thank you, Darlene. I know I got frontiered. I don't know what happened at the beginning of the program. We did get back, so hopefully it's not a complete disaster. Thanks to everybody who does keep the program on the air. And for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, there's certainly a bunch to talk about. Silent R, give it about an hour and check back in. Silent R says he missed out on a couple of points yesterday in our conversation. Ron and Raleigh with a note. I'm sure you've heard that one of your sister West Virginians has gone to her long home. Yeah, I did, and it's sad. God, she was a fantastic actor. Conchata Farrell has passed, 77 years old. She was born March of 1943, had a long and distinguished career. You can say she's one of those actors of whom you can say the most important thing that you can say about any actor. She always had work. She started out at West Virginia University, my alma mater, having been born in Loudoundale, West Virginia, and then her parents moved, and she was raised in Charleston, and like I said, went off to Harvard on the Mon for a couple of years. Didn't take too well to it. Left that, wound up getting a history education degree, which would, I'll have to tell Dr. Bill about that. He'll be tickled. Got a history education degree from Marshall University and sort of fell into acting in 1968, 1969. There was a little theatrical renaissance at Marshall back then, down there in Huntington. Because not just Conchata Ferrell, but another well-known character actor, comes out of that whole that whole scene too. And I'm struggling to come up with. I know it's on the tip of my tongue. Yeah, Brad Dourif. Brad Dourif, Grima Wormtongue, Dune, played the Doc in Deadwood. Yeah, Chucky. but again, had work. Yeah, they both came out of that scene in Huntington. Conchata Ferrell, of course, was known for her over 200 episodes in Two and a Half Men, nominated for an Emmy for her work on L.A. Law. Yeah, and passed away of complications from a cardiac arrest at a hospital in Los Angeles. But yeah, a West Virginian. And by the way, Ron and Raleigh observes, since Donnie Bag of Donuts is using Melanoma's son in his speeches, my Baron, my beautiful Baron. But then again, if you drill down, it turns into something sort of like a scene from Caddyshack. Notice you don't spend a lot of time in the lumberyard. Don't really know where it is. My beautiful Baron. Yeah, tell me about him. Can't really. Don't know him very well. Haven't seen him in a while. Yeah. Since Donnie Bag of Donuts is using Melanoma's son in his speeches, I'd like to make some observations, Ron says. I've never seen that boy smile. When you look at him, he's got all the worst features of his parents. He's got his daddy's cat's ass mouth, only more pronounced. And he's got his mother's cold, dead, lifeless eyes.
You know the thing about a shark? He's got lifeless eyes. Black eyes, like a doll's eye.
Just a couple of things I've noticed, says Ron and Raleigh. Of course, I spent a considerable part of the day watching the afterglow, Jesus Christ, the afterglow from the farce, the sham that was the any COVID Barrett confirmation extravaganza. And I don't know if you saw this, but Ron and Raleigh mentioning a famous West Virginian. Well, there's a woman who testified today against the nomination of any COVID Barrett, and a West Virginian. And I'm proud that I am she's a West Virginian, and I'm happy to call her fellow West Virginian. I'm talking about Crystal Good. She is a, she describes herself as an Afro-Latchin, because she's half African-American, entirely Appalachian. She has a family that she loves dearly, one of whom is a trans daughter, and she appeared to talk about how when she was a teenager, she got pregnant and needed an abortion, and how she had to go before a judge. But she was well-spoken, as she described it. She was well-spoken and light-skinned enough that maybe she didn't quite come across as, you know, black. And she had good grades, and everything was good in school. So she sat down and explained to the circuit judge about how she needed this here abortion. And if she couldn't get it, her life would be wrecked. And so the judge gave her permission to take control over the workings of her own reproductive system. If you did not see her testimony, I encourage you to go and find it. She's a big deal. And if I'm not mistaken, I think she's also a poet. And I can see how she could be. But she brought the heat, talking about how easy it would have been to force her to carry her baby to term if she had been a little blacker or a little mouthier, or her grades hadn't been excellent, or her extracurricular activities hadn't been wonderful. It was profound testimony. And we'll get into some more of that later in the program. Note coming in from Kyle. Thorn in the side, definitely Ben Sassy, and I know you'll get to him, but he's so mad about Trump mistreating women and kissing dictators that he votes with him 86% of the time and didn't vote to impeach him for doing exactly that. God damn it, I'm so fucking tired of these fucking Republicans. I know. Oh, yeah. And we will get to that. Jeremy in Vermont pointing out something I was hearing about last night and the better part of the day yesterday. Evidently, the Death Yam retweeted a viral video today that claims Joe Biden had all of the old SEAL Team 6 killed after the failed raid on bin Laden to cover up the failure, because they didn't kill bin Laden, they killed the bin Laden body double. Actually, that starts out as, but Barack Obama had them killed. And that shit was all over the goonier part of the White Wing yesterday. Some of the freaks that we from time to time feature on this program on things like Moran Monday and Prayer Meeting Wednesday in particular were absolutely on fire with this, because it was refuted by, well, I mean, he was kind of an asshole. Remember the guy who took his mask off and talked about how he was brave, patriotic, I done killed bin Laden, and wound up getting banned from Delta Airlines forever because he was talking about how he wasn't going to be a coward and a sissy, and the only other person in the photo was a guy with a Marine Corps hat on wearing his mask on the plane like he was supposed to, Robert O'Neill. Well, he heard that shit and said, oh, no, I was there. I pulled the damn trigger. And that wasn't any body double. And got kind of hot about it. But, well, we live in a time when a lie gets all the way around the world before the truth can get its shoes on. So there we are. And there you have it. And here we are. And that's how it is. So that's out there, too. And the phone and oh, the dudgeon, the dudgeon, it is high. among Republicans because Twitter isn't letting the maggots spread a lie based on disinformation from Mother Russia about Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time. We will hear about Hunter Biden till we's all fit to lose our mind. Yeah, that. And then this, Bob hit it out of the park last night when he was discussing the potential of the Affordable Care Act, Social Security, and Medicare being struck down by the Supreme Court, featuring Amy Scalia's crony, No Merit Barrett. That's a mouthful, but I got through it, and that's worth the cowbell. What's that, Giraffrey? Giraffrey states, I, Giraffrey the giraffe, believe only the highest minds should be elevated to the highest court. With that being said, I find the performance of Coney Barrett to be woefully inadequate, and she should not assume a seat on the Supreme Court. Her performance during the hearings has been so pathetic. I would like to offer up my opinion to the highest court. Ms. Coney Baloney should not only be removed from consideration from the highest court, but should also have the bar, B-A-R-R, taken out of Barrett, effectively disbarring her, as she is not sufficiently erudite to provide counsel to her children, let alone any monumental memoranda from Supreme Court. Yes, take the bar out of Barrett and you have nothing. Et al, Latin, and others, right? Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, that giraffery. Giraffery continues. As Joe and I were traveling along last night, I, Jeffrey the giraffe, like to look at the tall signs along the highway. High-minded fellow that he is. He can stare at them straight on, doesn't have to crane his neck, doesn't even get a crick in his neck. Can you imagine how awful it is to have a crick in your neck and be a giraffe? Honestly. And Billable Rick was right last night when he mentioned that Coney Barrett's children called in a missing person report on their mother, and there was a billboard sign, "Have you seen this woman?" There was a phone number, 1-800-LAW-MISS, attached under the picture of the notorious ACB. In the bottom of the billboard were several signatures from her former law professors at Notre Dame. Apparently, Amy not only has missed out on much of motherhood with her busy schedule, but is readily apparent after watching these hearings that she's missed a lot of law school, too. Thank you, Giraffrey, the funniest giraffe on planet Earth. In another context, Bob stated, frankly, it's the ones that don't make a bunch of noise that you have to worry about. With that, Bob was referring to people who may lose a loved one and become temporarily insane because they'll be aware of those in charge of this country who caused their loved one to die, but for the lack of health care. The point being that those with AR-15s are loud and openly dangerous, but they're nowhere near as dangerous as the right-wing cockroaches in the Congress and on the Supreme Court who are plotting to take away health care. What Bob said last night reminded me of the Sherlock Holmes story Silver Blaze, which was about a racehorse that was stolen on the eve of an important race. Sherlock Holmes was perplexed by the fact that several neighbors heard their own dogs barking in the middle of the night, but the dog owned by the proprietor of the stall housing the horse did not make a sound. A mystified Sherlock Holmes said unto Watson, "What?" I hate when that happens. "What speaks to me loudest, my dear Watson, is the dog that did not bark." Yes, unlike these militia types who run around with their weapons making all kinds of noise, Amy Coney Barrett has barely barked, as she has virtually said very little of substance during these hearings, and she has not been forthcoming or transparent with the American people. However, just like Silver Blaze, Barrett's horse is out of the barn, and nobody's fooled by her clandestine attempts to hide her motives. Coney Barrett is being installed on the Supreme Court so she can facilitate the larceny of an election that Trump cannot win legitimately, swindle Social Security into the hands of the huckster day traders on Wall Street, that's T-R-A-I-T-O-R-S, not T-R-A-D-E-R-S, and hand health care over to the hedge funders. This has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 15th day of October, with Giraffrey looking through his magnifying glass. And now you know the rest of the story. Yeah. Cowbells across the board for Joey and Giraffe on that. By the way, before anybody asks, we'll just take care of this. This is day 31 without a cigarette. Not that I'm trying to grind that into the dirt, but I figured I would go ahead and take care of that. That means I have been quit for a full long month. 31 days. So tomorrow begins, we will call it month two. Monday will be 35 days. It was convenient stopping on a Monday because that made keeping up with the all the more easy. I agree. I handed out several, if you didn't notice, Billable. Billable Rick says, Joey and Giraffe deserve a cowbell for the great analogy of the dog that did not bark and bear its testimony. That's cowbell worthy by itself. Agreed. During her hearings, Barrett was silent as a graven image and couldn't even opine on basic topics as to which there is or should be universal agreements, including whether, one, it's wrong to intimidate voters at the polls, two, it's wrong to separate breastfeeding infants from their mothers to deter border crossings, and three, that there should be a peaceful transfer of power from one president to another. If confirmed, Amy Barrett may become the worst Supreme Court justice since Roger B. Taney, who delivered the majority opinion in the Dred Scott case, and of course was one of the original originalists. Oh, it's been a lottery. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon. Sorry, I keep coming back to that. Steve, in New York, with an observation, WWSAD, otherwise known as What Would Saul Alinsky Do? Okay, you want to be an originalist, which, according to your own words, justice to be bad hair, means reading the words of the original words of the Constitution as to their meaning at the time the writers wrote it, so define arms under the Second Amendment. No, no, see, that's not what they mean. And that plays nicely into what I was going to start the program with. Well, hang in there, Kyle. Dadgummit, I'm proud of you. We're all proud of you. Damn it, Bob, says Kyle. I've only gone about 3 hours into my attempt to quit, and I'm already about to jump out of my skin. I know the feeling. And let me tell you, I'm not telling you. Stop telling us when to quit smoking, Bob. Okay. I had that one coming. Stop telling us how to quit smoking, Bob. Had that one coming, too. Stop telling us we don't have to quit smoking, Bob. All right already. But you can't quit till you're ready. At the suggestion of our buddy Robert in Japan on Facebook earlier today, I went out and took one of my long walks down the narrow gauge rail track. I didn't go all the way to the river this time. Didn't have the time to do that. But after a couple of decades here, you begin to be able to gauge the seasons and the colors are as good as they're going to get. Most of the reds and purples are already gone. But the gold is out in profusion. And so I told Agnes, I ran a couple of errands, and then I said, I'm going to go down the trail and see if I can get some pictures. I will try to remember to actually upload some of these, because if I dare say so myself, they're freaking beautiful. You know, I think it was Robert Frost who said, nature's first green is gold. Well, around here, the last real color on the trees is gold, too. But while I was out running errands, I felt a sharp gust of wind across my face. And I realized that the scouring wind may come early this year. That's what I call it. Sometime, usually it happens late November, early December, but there will be a hard rain and then a day of just hard winds, and the trees will be, everything will be erased from them, and we will know that winter is coming in earnest with the gray and the grim skeletal appearing hills that will not see color again until the red buds erupt in March and the ramps poke their little green leaves out of the ground. So something inside me said, if you want to get any pictures of fall colors in one of your favorite places around here, you better do it today. Because tomorrow is rain, and you know, one thing that leaves that have turned on the trees in autumn hate is a good hard rain. And so lo and behold, as I went down the trail, where only a couple of weeks ago, remember I told you, went all the way down to the river and back? And I've been trying to get more exercise because I'm eating the damn world now that I've quit smoking. And I would like to maintain my trim and svelte figure. Ha! But when I went down a couple of weeks ago down the trail, the trail was gravel. This time, it was paved in the russet browns and fading golds of hardwood leaves that had come down onto the trail. So I knew that my intuition had been correct. So I went down about, the whole walk wound up being a couple of miles. And I went down to where you can actually get out into the creek and went and took a bunch of pictures, and the sun was playing peekaboo with a few skating clouds. And I could actually feel real warmth on my skin. And I realized that's going to become a thing of the past, a remembered thing until, probably May. Good God, that's 7.5 months from now. Ouch. 19 days till the election, though. 19. Remember that? This is what you get for tuning into a radio show that has an old DJ for a host. 19. But it was cleansing. And I had a chance to, and this is always what happens when I take these walks. Usually I'm by myself. And I got to thinking about things. And while I thought I had unburdened myself of my loathing for the notion of originalism and textualism, a couple of isms that are nothing more than camouflage for right-wing pieces of shit to do their dirty business. Oh, okay, Jeremy. All right, is it going to be like that tonight? Bob, stop telling us. You know you're telling us how and when to quit and that you had this email speeding your way. We haven't had one of those. That's high quality. Quit telling us they're high quality, Bob. thanks, Jeremy. But apparently I haven't. I haven't because we have been bludgeoned. We have been cudgeled with this horseshit notion of originalism and textualism. And I don't know about you, but I'm damned well sick of it. It's bad enough to have the con artist tell us, hey, no, really. There's only three cards here. The queen's one of them. All you got to do is find the queen. $500 later, you still can't find the fucking queen. And they're still and they're sitting there. They're holding. They're not going to laugh until they're away from you. But oh, what a schmuck you are! And I got to thinking about Amy Tony's parrot. And how she
promised us that she'll only make her decisions based upon the text of the statute and the text of the law. And she won't let her personal views come into it.
Ugh. And it occurred to me to ask, then what the hell good is she?
Anybody can do that. I promise you, it does not take a lawyer to do that. To just look at a piece of text and say, well, the text says what it says. I mean, we're going to be paying her a shitload of money for the rest of her miserable life to do something that basically anybody who got better than a C in high school English can do. That ain't lawyering. I think by now it's pretty obvious that if he's not my favorite poet, he is among my top two or three. Robert Frost. And a long, 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 long time ago, I had a copy of the complete works of Robert Frost that my grandmother had ordered from the Book of the Month Club probably before I was born, or maybe shortly thereafter. And I took off reading it. And I can highly recommend that anyone should have that book in hard copy form on their bookshelf. There's just something warm and organic and alive and gratifying about holding that book and reading from its pages. And I ran across something in the back, a pair of dialogues for all that I love poetry, I love theater better. And these are scripts. And these two scripts at the toward the back of the complete works of Robert Frost, one of them is called A Mask of Reason, M-A-S-Q-U-E. And another is called A Mask of Mercy. And just to, I'm not going to read from them or anything, but the first one, A Mask of Reason, has to do with Job and his wife sitting around in paradise. And they've been there for a good long while now. And Job is still more than a little bit perplexed over why God shit all over him the way he did. And lo and behold, the almighty creator of the universe, the great big bearded juvenile delinquent himself, shows up. And there are questions asked. And that's why it's a mask of reason. I don't want to spoil it for anybody that might want to go and read this. The other one takes place in a bookshop, I think in New York City. Pretty much at the end of the world. And the bookshop is owned by St. Paul. And that's A Mask of Mercy. And that's what started circulating through my mind on my walk this afternoon. That the real purpose... Well, back up. Let me try to make this make sense outside of my own head. Laws and codes of law and the very idea of law are human things. You can't mine for a law. You can't drill for a law. And despite the best efforts of the superstitious people, laws don't appear out of nowhere or get carved into the stone by the finger of the great big juvenile delinquent in the sky and brought down from Sinai on tablets that would have broken an old man's back trying to haul them down the hill. Laws are human creations. I had a professor at Duquesne University in DeBerg. Hi, Rico. The last year of my sojourn in law school. And he was a dandy. And he had a very esoteric approach to the idea of law. He was real weird for me, being a kid who was raised Southern Baptist, and B, a kid by then who was not buying into that poppycock either, and C, being a person who was wildly fond of the separation of church and state. It was real weird for me going to a classroom there at Duquesne. I know how to pronounce it. Stop it. Flavio's probably sitting there in lovely, lovely La Crosse, just quivering a little bit because I said Duquesne. That's just the hillbilly pronunciation, Flavio. It's okay. Things like that go right through a master practitioner of the art of word knowing, like Flavio is. But it was jarring to me to go into that classroom every day and see poor old Jesus hanging up on the wall, just a bleeding and a suffering on the cross, all day, every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I looked at my Roman Catholic buddy that was commuting to class with me, and I said, "Don't they know he got down?" And I got an elbow in the ribs and a shut the fuck up for my trouble. And he was like, "No, really, it's a little grisly, isn't it?" And it was a 70-mile commute to Pittsburgh from Morgantown. And we talked about it that night on the way back. And I was like, "Seriously? That's just gory as shit. I mean, are y'all forgetful or something? Do you constantly have to be reminded?" We did not resolve the issue. But what this professor said was that great cultures manifest their greatness usually in one or another particular art form. And as an example, he said the Greeks manifested their creative energies in sculpture. Consider the architecture. Consider the great sculptural works of Praxiteles. The magnificence of the Olympian Zeus. The Athena Parthenos of Athens. The Romans manifested their genius in their engineering. Doing things that had never been done before. The Phoenicians, the Minoans, in creative trade networks, because the creation of a network is a thing of art too. And then he turned his attention to the children of Israel. And he said that the ancient Hebrew people manifested their creative genius in creating law. And he said, sure, the Code of Hammurabi's there, and the Code of Hammurabi is extremely detailed. But the children of Israel made it personal. It wasn't just something to be dispensed by a king or an emperor. It was something to be kept and cherished in one's heart and lived in every moment of every day. And I was deeply impressed with his lecture. The fact that I remember it now, 30 years on, is testament to that. Perhaps that professor is no longer even with us. Yeah, Ron and Raleigh. That's a cowbell. Ron and Raleigh noting, "Today on the EIB Network, my friends, we'll be discussing the works of Robert Frost and its relations to today's politics." Ron and Raleigh noting, "I'll bet that didn't happen." Oh, no, that's never happened. Never gonna happen either. But with all that, that's what was sort of banging like a pinball around inside my noggin while I was walking today. And by definition, a judge who promises you that the only thing she will do is look at the text of a statute and apply it without any concern whatsoever for the ultimate outcome of the decision. And don't be fooled by that bullshit that she offered up about how she likes to think about how her decisions would affect one of her children. As she considers it. Because I guarantee you that when she was participating in that case in which she held that the use of the N-word did not constitute a hostile work environment, I promise you she never thought about her two adopted Haitian children. I promise. But a judge who says, any judge who says, well, I'm a textualist. That judge is saying, I'm too lazy to do my job. Just as a for instance, it's my understanding that while the Decalogue contains the command that thou shalt not steal, in the ancient Hebrew culture, a person who was starving and stole food would not be prosecuted as a thief, because the law is nothing without the life that makes it exist. And so the preservation of the life is more important than the letter of the law. It's my understanding that the people of the ancient Valley of Mexico set aside the first six rows of a cornfield for anybody who needed it, and no one picking from those first six rows would be convicted of theft. Because those first six rows were there expressly to make sure that no one went hungry. And so we kind of loop back around to Robert Frost and his Mask of Mercy. The law has two motivating principles. And those two principles are mercy and justice. And if the only thing in the world you're doing is going by the text of some godforsaken statute, when lives hang in the balance, you are incapable of doing either. Someone who interprets text as though it was a rock found on the moon and brought back, by definition, misses the fact that it's a rock from the fucking moon. Now, a geologist can look at a moon rock and it's been done, and we can learn all kinds of things about it. But you cannot simply pretend that it's a rock like any rock on planet Earth, because it came from the moon. And if you fail to acknowledge its lunar pedigree, you're probably going to miss out on the ultimate impact of whatever it is that you've learned about the rock. the application of law to facts without the use of mercy and justice is not law. It's not adjudication. It's mere machine work. If all those people up there are going to do, and understand, these right-wing judges, when they say, oh, I'm an originalist, just like Fat Dead Tony, or, oh, I'm a textualist, they're lying. They're lying in that moment. And I guess we'll leave it to the psychologists and the psychiatrists to figure out whether they are deliberately lying to us or whether they're also lying to themselves for some reason and motivation that we can't get to. But they're lying. And there was a lot of palaver today about how we can't, we run the risk of diminishing the respect for our judicial system in the eyes of the citizens. No, hell no. That ship sailed a long time ago. The barn burnt and the horse ran away. Things like from back in the 80s, attempt to make sure that judges didn't use their discretion to dispense mercy or justice. The sentencing guidelines. Pure poison. Because the whole reason an Article III judge is an Article III judge is because we trust that individual to be wise enough to try a case and then do justice at the end of it. Or perhaps to do mercy. And you know, the argument about what is justice and what role does mercy play, you can spend years in academic parlor games and never get out of the works of Plato. Because justice and mercy eat up a whole lot of time and a lot of text among the ancients. Because I think they realized that they were, and they lived in a world that was a lot closer to the bone than we do. We live divorced from nature and from, most of the time, the intimate workings of our planet. Oh, every now and then, you know, 26 or so times a year this year, a hurricane will bear down on some benighted coastline of the United States. And then suddenly people will realize, hey, shit, we live on a planet. You know, when the wildfires are encroaching on your neighborhood, suddenly the fact that you live in a fire-prone part of the world becomes a little bit more immediate. When the F5 tornado spins up and you're sitting in a bathtub with a mattress over top of you trying to figure out if you want the bathtub fixture to go through your front or your back, you are a human being living in the world. But most of the time we're not. Most of the time, meat comes from a case in the grocery store, and we never think about the CAFO. Bacon comes to us vacuum sealed, and we never think of the immigrants standing there with hog carcasses flying by them like cars on a road as they slash and hack with razor sharp butcher knives and hope that they see the end of the shift with all of their digits intact. And they're paid shit along the way for what they do. We turn the lights on in a room and we walk out and leave the lights on and never think for a moment about the charge that a coal company is setting off that's the equivalent of a goddamned Hiroshima blast every 7 days in Appalachia. Nah, as long as we pay the power bill, we'll keep having electricity. But by the time you are standing in front of a judge and jury, whether it's a civil suit because some doctor cut the wrong leg off, you know, that really happened. I mean, I remember it was, God, was it a campaign speech or a debate or what, back when Dim Leader, we were in the midst of the reign of error, and we thought if we could just get past him, we could fix America's problems, and we'd never have to worry about America ever electing anybody nearly as stupid as George W. Bush again. But I remember him standing there and saying, yeah, we got to have tort reform. We got to, because too many OBGYNs are not allowed to practice their love of women. I mean, there was the one doctor, he was supposed to cut off one leg, and he cut off the wrong leg, and then he had to go back and cut off the leg he was supposed to cut off the first time, and then that person didn't have any legs. But you know what? They didn't have any legs, but they had just won life's lottery. Because of our runaway medical malpractice system. They won life's lottery. By the time your case is so bad that it gets in front of a court, what it means is that neither side could come to a reasonable conclusion about what the outcome should be. Only the worst cases wind up in front of a judge and jury, or just judge. The worst criminal cases, and the worst civil cases. And the contracts cases where somebody's been screwed to the wall, and the lawyers can't work out some kind of a settlement. So you get to the, you go to a judge and jury, and plead your case. Well, strict textualism and originalism are precisely no help whatsoever in those moments. A judge that does not know how to exercise mercy, and a judge that does not know how to impose justice, but instead it presumes to act like some sort of Vulcan machine who merely reads a statute and spits out a result, that is not a person worth having on a court. Do you remember the shit hemorrhage that the White Wing had back when Sonia Sotomayor was being confirmed? And she said she thought that the Supreme Court could benefit from having, her words, a wise Latina on the bench. And the phlegm balls and the Hannity jobs and the Becker heads and the falafel boy O'Reilly's all went absolutely bananas. Oh, how dare she say she's going to bring her Latina-ness. My friends, we can't have someone who's proud to be a wise Latina on the court. What does she mean she's going to have empathy for litigants? My God, that means she's not a textualist or an originalist, my friends. So maybe now I've gotten some of this off of my chest. But every time we have one of these right-wing judge confirmation, justice confirmation spectacles, I realize once more how little respect I do have for the judicial system. Because it's made up of people who, for the most part, have never lived anything resembling the life that is lived by the people who come before them. Amy Coney Barrett has never suffered. Nobody's ever called Amy Coney Barrett the equivalent of the N-word, if there even is an equivalent to call her. And she never will. And there is something fundamentally wrong, and maybe it's one of those late stages of empire devolution kind of things, when we have this notion that your, what your grades were in law school and what your status was on the fucking moot court or the law review and how many articles you've published and how long you've taught in some ivory tower have more value than whether or not you were a good lawyer who knows how to do your job. Again, she tried to play trial judge with Kamala Harris yesterday, and Kamala Harris was having none of it. I don't see where you're going with this. No, your damn business. You ask, I'll ask the questions, you answer them. You know, or not, as the case may be. But don't be taken in by terms like textualist and originalist. It's flim-flam. It's smoke and mirrors. Hell, among other things, it's laziness. God lover Lori Lightfoot, the mayor of Chicago, Dick Durbin pointed out today that somebody asked her yesterday, well, are you an originalist? And Mayor Lightfoot of Chicago said, are you kidding me? I'm a black female lesbian. The originalists of 1787 didn't have any room at all in their world for me. So no, I'm no originalist. And frankly, there should be a campaign. There should be a campaign to drive this fraud of originalism and textualism from our midst and from our discussions. I'm not trying to suppress intellectual activity. I'm saying that you run it out of town on a rail and tar and feather the practitioners just like you would a snake oil salesman sitting there hustling the rubes in the middle of town. They're flim-flam artists. And when you catch a flim-flam artist, you tar them, you feather them, and you run them out of town. So they can't hurt you anymore. Textualism and originalism are not legitimate intellectual pursuits. And in fact, when it comes to the business of judging anybody who says that they are a practitioner of an ism, shouldn't be allowed anywhere near a robe or a gavel. The quality of mercy is not strained. It falleth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the just and the unjust. You know, the people who have really screwed up and done bad things, they're the ones who always holler for mercy. And the people who like to see people punished, they're the ones who always holler for justice. Today, we were introduced by way of a retired judge from the D.C. Circuit who casually mentioned along the way that he had been counsel for Brigham Young University, so that let you know that that was a religious maniac. Let slip how and he did this as proof of the fact that living proof that Amy Coney Barrett wouldn't let her personal beliefs get in the way of her judging. He told the story of how she joined a majority opinion that allowed a prison inmate to be murdered by the state, even though, the witness told us, she's personally opposed to the death penalty. And that was the moment, that was one of those little seed moments for this conversation, this filibobster. I would far rather have her say, I am morally opposed to the death penalty and morally opposed to abortion, and then act accordingly, than to have her sitting there hiding behind some bullshit-ism and trying to pretend that she is someone that she is not. So she went along with snuffing out the life of someone that someone else along the way had said damned well deserved it. Don't know who the individual was. Don't know how heinous the crime. If it was a murder, it was heinous enough. There's little left to be discussed. But how are we ever going to answer these hard questions if people sit there and do nose hits off their smelling salts and talk about how, I'm a textualist. I'm an originalist. I can't talk about what this means within anything except the four corners of the text. Because that's how you get to Fat Dead Tony declaring that the Constitution of the United States does not guarantee you the right not to be murdered by the state, even if you're innocent. How's that a constitution worth having? And what the hell good is it? So there's a great, you know, y'all can chime in anytime you want to on all of this. Originalism not, says Steve in New York. Interestingly, this filibobster reinforces my assertion that we need a system more like the UK, to wit, not just a constitutional monarchy, but also a constitution, as the UK and other countries of the Commonwealth define it. Scrap a written constitution as we currently have it, and build an unwritten constitution over time, consisting only of precedents, traditions, etc., as the UK has it. Interesting. Adding, the judicial system. I think the problem with the justice system is lawyers as judges. Well, I think, if I can expand on that, Steve, I think it has to do with the idea that you can tell what kind of a lawyer is without them ever having had to practice law. Because talking to a room full of wet behind the ear lawyer wannabes and telling them about the nuances of Rule 12b-6 is not the same thing as being down there in the blood and the guts and arguing for the very life of your client or your client's claim against a motion to dismiss it for failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. I don't think anybody should ever be elevated to the bench who hasn't had at least 10 years trial experience. And I don't think anybody should ever be elevated to the appellate court bench without at least 10 years as a trial judge. I think we'd have a hell of a lot better outcomes then. To Rush Hemorrhoid and his little pustule followers, Robert Frost is just Jack's boy. Jack's boy. Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Steve. Hasidic Tale, Lee in New York offers. Judaism teaches that there are reasons to break the rules. I asked my children if you should ever go through a red light. They say no. But then I ask about if there's a fire engine or police car behind me with its lights on. Here's a Hasidic tale about Yom Kippur, the single holiest day of the year in the Jewish calendar. Actually, Shabbat is holier because it's in God's top 10 list, but here's the tale. A town gathers in the synagogue for Yom Kippur, for the service. It seems that everyone is there except for the rabbi. Eventually, the congregation decides to search for the rabbi. The rabbi was found with a sick child. The rabbi was asked, "Rabbi, why aren't you at the synagogue?" And the rabbi answered, "Because this is what is important." And what was Hillel alleged to have said? They asked him which was the greatest commandment. And he said, to love God. I'm probably getting this wrong. I said, what's the second? He said, don't do things to other people that you would hate to have done to you. And then he said, the rest is commentary. I got it wrong, I'm sure, but the idea stuck with me. But I guess what I'm trying to get to is that there is more wrong with our judicial system than just a handful of rotten judges. And we won't remedy them. They won't be remedied by Democrats or Republicans. They'll only be remedied probably by Democrats. Because the Republicans merely want power for power's sake. That parade, that litany of sick people who will die if Amy Coney Barrett does as she has signaled she will do and votes to strike down the Affordable Care Act, well, all those sick people that were paraded in front of the Republicans were a giant waste of time because the Republicans don't give a damn about them, are never going to give a damn about them, couldn't give a damn if they were spotted the D and the A and the M and forgiven for losing the N. It's not who they are. It's not what they're into. As the old saying goes, they're just not that into us. And if we ever want to make anything better, they have to be kept well and truly away from power forever. I mean, it's like not saying, Voldemort's name. Or perhaps more appropriately, Beetlejuice's. Three times. And thank you very kindly to Dale. Dale, thanks a bunch for jumping in and helping us get started on fundraising for this evening. That takes us down to 180. 180 and we are done for the evening. 380 and we are done for the week. Thank you, Dale. And thank you to Lane and thank you to Jeremy. Getting things going for this evening. They need some company. As Kyle points out, she won't let her personal ways affect how she rules. Bullshit. That's exactly what we're going to watch happen. Yeah, do unto others as you would have them do unto you is how we know it from the King James Version, Jeremy. But it actually comes from Hillel, who said something like, don't do to other people things that you would hate to have done to you. Or don't do to other people things that you hate. That was the way it was explained to me. Lee in New York adding, your volunteer researcher, once there was a Gentile who came before Shammai and said to him, convert me on the condition that you teach me the whole of the Torah while I stand on one foot. Shammai pushed him aside with the measuring stick he was holding. The same fellow came before Hillel, and Hillel converted him, saying, that which is despicable to you, do not do to your fellow. This is the whole of the Torah, and the rest is commentary. Go and learn it. And that comes from the Babylonian Talmud, and I love that story. Bob, it seems to me that any judge who promises anything before the fact is prejudged any case. And I believe that prejudging a case before the case is submitted is a violation of ethics. The mere promise should make it so she's disbarred, which I assume would require a finding by the Bar Association, followed by impeachment in the House and a trial in the Senate. Eh, who am I kidding? Those guys couldn't try their way out of a wet paper sack. Your buddy Dave in the blind. Say hi to the guys down at the shop, Dave. Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium. That's the shop. And again, she, well, I haven't made any deals with Donald Trump. She didn't have to. Those deals were made eons ago. Eons ago. When she was getting on the list. Thank you to Women Standing. Thank you to Women Standing very kindly. That gets us down to 170. Thank you so much. Jude is off to Portland with the boots and flowers this weekend. And if we can get away from all this judicial stuff, my God. COVID Caligula is actually boasting about ordering death squads into action. No, really. Something that should be absolutely horrifying. He bragged about having an Antifa sympathizer murdered. Which, if true, is getting perilously close to what I used to describe as, or what I have described here as, that moment when we realize how fucked we really are. You know the one where I say that 100 members of various different law enforcement agencies, all empowered to arrest upon witnessing of a felony, see Donald Trump gun somebody down in cold blood, kill him dead, and none of them can arrest him because the president cannot be prosecuted or indicted while sitting in the Oval Office, while he's still president. We're getting perilously close to that. He went and had another one of his super spreader events out in Iowegia, and that's where this happened.
We sent in the U.S. Marshals. Took 15 minutes, it was over. 15 minutes, it was over. We got him. They knew who he was. They didn't want to arrest him. And 15 minutes, that ended. Anyway, and they call themselves peaceful protesters. We sent in.
And they call themselves peaceful protesters. What we're talking about here is the, oh God. What we're talking about is the federal task force that apparently blew away an American citizen without so much as a you're under arrest. Michael Reinl, you may recall, he had absented himself after having been suspected of killing a fascist in Portland, Oregon. He was said to be the focus of an investigation. So on September 3rd, he was getting into his Volkswagen station wagon. It was about 120 miles north of Portland, Oregon. And a pair of unmarked sport utility vehicles zoomed down the streets. Now, he wasn't on the run. He wasn't menacing anybody. He wasn't carrying an AR-15. They zoomed up on him right in front of his vehicle, inches from his bumper. And that's when the U.S. Marshals Task Force jumped out, fired bullets all over the place that even went past bystanders, and gunned Michael Reinhold down in cold blood. And Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr bragged about how they had removed a violent agitator. They accused him. Barr said that he tried to resist or escape arrest, and he produced a firearm. But we have since figured out that there was no escape and there was no firearm. And so in Iowa, again, we got this.
The U.S. Marshals took 15 minutes, it was over. 15 minutes, it was over. We got him. They knew who he was. They didn't want to arrest him. And 15 minutes, that ended.
The President of the United States is bragging about the extrajudicial assassination of someone he deemed an enemy. 15 bullet holes, 14 of them through the front driver's side windshield of the Volkswagen. And the President of the United States is bragging about sending a death squad. To kill a man who had not even been charged with a crime. Remember, one of his buddies is Duterte in the Philippines, who does this kind of shit all the time. Another of his buddies is Jair Bolsonaro, who likes the same sort of action. And another one of his buddies is Erdogan in Turkey, who's made a career of it. A responsible republic would be having an inquiry about this, but that's not us. Oh, hell no, that's not us. Let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's me again.
Hey, what's up, Lamar?
You make it so damn hard for me to stick to one topic.
You?
Oh, my God. You?
You work me
like a rib over a base. I mean, I'm waiting for you to put marinade and everything.
I was going
to
say, you waiting for the sauce?
Yes, I am. I'm waiting for the sauce because you just, I wanted to call and talk to you about yesterday. And you bring up nine other items that I can argue with you about tonight. And, you know, it's not good for somebody to call in back to back. And, you know,
I understand, but you asked real nicely, like, and you said there was stuff you missed, so I wanted you to have the opportunity.
So I'm going to go to the stuff I missed, and then I'm going to go into what you fired up my black ass about tonight, okay? I had to put the black in case somebody doesn't realize I'm still black. You said yesterday, you try and be serious. I like to put humor in seriousness because I'm serious all the time.
I understand.
I'm being serious all the time. But we were talking about Miss Thang and her having black children. The problem that she runs into, she can protect them all she wants, but it's society that she is promoting that is going to kill her children. And until it happens to her, she's not going to change. She is going to do everything she is supposed to do being put on the bench. But see, my point like this, I am a problem solver. I know how to solve this problem. Put her ass on the bench. And when four or five of her agreements come through, we the people attack her punk ass. Make such an uproar of her decision doing what she did, going with
Let's be clear for Agent Fred. You're talking about peaceful protest.
Yes, peaceful protest. Because right now, the Republicans have, oh God, can I quote a Chinese proverb?
Probably better than me.
There is a time to be a oak, and there is a time to be a reed in the wind. There are times to be strong and fight the wind off, and there's times to bend with the wind. The Democratic Party needs to bend with the wind right now. Give them everything they want. I want this bitch on the, I want Miss Thang on the court. So when she kills all the things that Republicans who claim they are this, that, and this, let me give you a pointer. If you don't make $500,000 by your damn self, Republican programs do not help you. End of story. So all those people who want to run and jump up and down saying, I'm a Republican, do this, want to follow Donald Trump over the edge of the cliff like most lemurs do, see you later. I am all about thinning the herd out. Because I understand one thing. I was born in 58. I was brought up. I am an American first. My Democratic Party is second. And my religion is none of your damn business. And Miss Thang, with her adopted black children, getting to the point that I said earlier, white people with influence should never hire should never adopt a child because they are not looking at the repercussions for that child. Because as long as that child is married into a rich family, they can only protect them so far. Think about O.J. Simpson's kids. Their mother was white. He was black. He was a professional football star. He got records and all this up. How do you think they feel? You know what? You notice the public and the media doesn't talk about OJ's kids because they're being fucked over. Your daddy was a murderer. Your daddy killed your mama. So that's what they're going to say. They don't want to bring that up. White media is the problem that we have right now. Right now, I am a reed in the wind. I want this heifer on the court. I want this heifer to strike down everything. Because for her to strike down everything and the Republicans getting everything they want, we can cleanse the Republican Party of stupidity. Because every Republican who do not make over $400,000 is going to be pushed to the wayside. Right now, they just reported earlier today, we have over 8 million new poor people. And Trump's supposed to be doing a fantastic-ass job. Explain that to me, Bob.
Well, I was going to point something else out, Lamar, and that in the midst of all of this talk about, she's going to take away the ACA. She may very well, you know, alongside Brat, the beer drinker, and Ann's boy Neil, and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, and Sammy Bad Breath shoot the black kid in the back of the head, Alito. and, you know, maybe even old Balls and Strikes, dead-eyed John Roberts. That's enough to strike down the whole of the ACA. But there's a but hold on.
I'm gonna wait.
There's a wrinkle here. They're gonna have the arguments on November the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
It will be well past the inauguration of the President of the United States before they come down with a ruling.
Okay.
Wait. Not done.
Okay.
So, if Biden wins the presidency, and if we hold the House, and if we take the Senate, and, mirabile dictu, if we can get rid of, along the way, also take the Senate and send Lindsey Graham packing and send Moscow Mitch packing and send John Cornholio packing. You know what we can do then? We can pass a new health care law and sign it into law before the Supreme Court can ever issue its goddamned opinion, and we can laugh at them when they do.
Okay, you know what my point is? I like playing hardball. I don't like hardball, but I can play.
Well, that's hardball, Lamar. That's hardball.
No, I'm about to be even harder, because I'm going to bring you a scenario that nobody has thought about. I've been blessed with problem solving. That has one of my skill sets. Fuck the presidency. Remember how America is set up. Right now, I don't give a fuck who is president. I want to have the House and the Senate, because that's how you get laws passed. If Trump finagles his punk ass to win this and again, keep Biden from being president, if we take over the Senate, we can impeach his ass on the first fuck-up he does. The power is
but we can't. But hold on, Lamar. Hold on, but we can't convict him.
No. Fuck convicting him.
That's the only way you remove him from office, Lamar.
But if we have the Senate, Bob.
You have to have 60. No, Lamar. You don't just have to have the Senate. A simple majority won't do. You have to have 67 votes in the Senate.
We can get. That's what I would focus on getting.
That ain't going to happen. There are not enough senators running for re-election to make that happen.
Well, that's where the Reed and the Wind comes in. You have to bend. If we can get enough seats to take Mitch McConnell out, we can move the progress of American people a little bit further. And then when the next election come around, we can get what we need to move the bitch out. Trump is, the only reason Trump is getting away with his bullshit that he's doing, he has a Senate that will not move against him. Now, you can put the brakes on the Senate, or at least make them think, or choke like when you pull the choke on the goddamn car, gaggle for a few minutes. This bitch, he is not doing anything. He is a fucking used car salesman. He waves his arms like he's trying to promote some bullshit idea. And everybody is memorized by his fucking swaying of his hand. He wants herd immunity. These stupid motherfuckers don't understand. Herd immunity means that 70% of the population must die. Well, if 70% of the population must die, then guess what? You don't have enough population to defend your goddamn continent, stupid motherfuckers. Excuse my French, but I'm getting, you really bringing out the
military. I know, I got you worked up. I got you worked up, Lamar, and I shouldn't have done that.
You got me worked up. You got me worked up because white people are their worst. I have nothing against you or other white people. But white people are their own worst fucking enemy. every Republican who votes for Donald Trump, who don't make $500,000 or $400,000 a year, relies on Democratic programs. And then you got Fox, the propaganda channel, telling them your problem is the Democrats. Well, you know what? They just cut your Social Security. How did the Democrats didn't cut your Social Security? The Republicans did. So how in the fuck is the Democrats' problem? The stupidity is thick. We need more than a butter knife. We need a serious chainsaw to get through the stupidity. Today, I had to turn off all political bullshit until your show came on. Because I'm tired of hearing about all these, what you call it, by me being, my brain works on solving problems. I'm solving an architectural problem now. I can't listen to you, this, the craziness in America, because America's problem is the Americans. Until we become unified as one, we're going to be playing this game over and over and over. And since most Americans do not know how government functions, the House and the Senate are the power. The president is a puppet. He's a puppet. Because if we choose to not, if we choose to ignore his punk ass, we can override his veto. That can't be done in no dictatorship. It can only be done in America. And see, Trump is pushing all this bullshit that he's getting from Erdogan, Russia, and all this other. He keeps forgetting America does have certain rules that does not allow that shit to work. If the government doesn't get involved, the people do, because somewhere down the line, the people remember we the people, which is the government, form a more perfect union. When these assholes are tired of getting their ass kicked up into their throats, they will start rebelling. Just like this asshole Trump guy that say, well, the killing of Osama bin Laden was fake. They had a body double. And then you have the people who are Republican who made this killing come out and say, wait a minute, Chief, that's bullshit. See, he told these assholes who do not want to understand or listen when he was inaugurated, I'd listen. My job is to listen to my clients, to solve and understand what they're going through. When a motherfucker comes up and tells me, well, I am worried about next year or 2 years from now, I mean, excuse me, Chief, what about this year? Trump came up and said, well, thank you for inaugurating me. I'm the president, and let's get ready for another 4 years. I'm in campaigning for next following year. Excuse me, Chief. Blink, blink. What the fuck is going on? What's happening now? What are you going to do now? Oh, no, don't worry about it now. I'm worried about 4 years from now. Excuse me. I'm suffering now. What are you going to do for me now? Well, no, I will take care of you 4 years from now. What if I lose my house? Talk to Mr. So-and-so. You
oh, well, we went through that with the Great Recession. Okay. Remember the Republicans were more than happy to let people lose their houses. And then then their pals swept in, bought them up for a song. And now they're not even rental properties. They're goddamned Airbnbs.
I'm gonna tell you one thing right now. You agree with me. You can't agree with me right now. Somehow, some way, we are going to have to reintroduce to this Republican American population. We are a consumption country. Our economy is based on consumption. If you don't pay the people for their labor, how you expect to get more money? That's the equation and the question nobody wants to talk about. I don't, like I said, Trump got up there and said, don't believe the media, believe me. Well, you know what? Your ass is right in the same place as your mouth. I am sorry. People say his lips look like a cat's anus. I have owned cats. I'm a dog man. I'm allergic to cats. I'm a dog man. But his mouth looks like a cat's asshole. And his waving of his hands and all this gesture he does. Mr. I'll buy that from a dollar New York propaganda. Oh my God, he is the best used car salesman in the world. And nobody looks at his past. They're just thinking about now. But see, under Ronald Reagan changed America. He made America selfish and greedy.
Selfish, stupid, and mean.
You know what? I have to give you that. Because you remember when I sent you the email saying that I had to fight people and all this other stuff about my, they're talking bad about my mama and all this stuff going on and I couldn't speak black. I still don't speak black. I'm 62 years old. I still don't speak black. But reason why I don't speak black because I am still corporate America. I am in white America. I can't talk black. And when people talk black, I acknowledge where you're coming from. But see, I have a flip side. I'm militant. I'll pump lead in both of all your asses because if I'm going to survive and save my family, I will pump lead in your ass. But see, the problem is this.
Right, but Lamar, all this is figuratively, is spoken figuratively. Because I don't want any visits from those humorless people in the black suits that talk to their wrists and wear skinny black ties. Okay?
Right now, at 62 years old, I don't give a fuck, okay?
Yeah, I know, but I'm not 62. And they're going to visit me, not you.
I know, you're the same age as my sister. Born in 63 or 67, one of the two.
Yeah, I'm 63.
You're younger than me. Okay, I understand what you're going through. Even though at 63, you were not involved in the uprising of the black people pressing for, just give me some table crumbs and get your ass off my neck.
No, hell no.
See, here's the thing I get a kick out of. White people say, well, the riots. Well, let's go to the crux of the problem. Why did we have a riot? Bottom line, white cops killing black people. End of story. If the white cop had not killed a black person, would we have had the riot? That is the question nobody asks. That is the question nobody talks about. The Watts riot. They killed some Negroes or they beat up some Negroes on Sepulveda. Boom! All the shit blows up. Oh. They beat up a black person up here in Los Angeles. Boom, the Rodney King blows up. Boom, white cops kill,
right.
Kill exactly. Some people, kill somebody. It's all about, they don't look at what caused the bullshit.
Well, they don't want to. Hey, Lamar, somebody else is trying to ring in here, so I'm going to take that call. I'm glad you followed up, all right? Take care, my friend.
You too, buddy.
You got him going again. Later. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello? Well, I connected the call. Whoever's there, try back, okay? We'll get this right yet. And in the meantime, thanks going out to, Louis. or Lewis. I'm not sure which is correct. You tell me. Thank you very kindly. We've just gotten down to 155. 155 to finish the evening. Thank you very kindly. All right. I think this is Nydia. Are you there,
yeah.
Nydia?
Yes, absolutely. Is.
All right. I've got
you. I am here. Can you hear me?
I do indeed.
Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. And for those in the Horn community that don't know me, I'm an avid listener of this program for many years. I don't often call in. But I wanted to.
But you make it count when you do.
Well, I don't know. We'll see what you say at the conclusion of this, because I want to push back a little bit about some of the conversation last night. And as I'm sure you can gather, I have nothing but disdain for Amy. Whatever her name is, Amy Barrett, just the sound of her voice makes me want to retch, okay? So this is not coming from a place of defending her.
No, no, no.
Or her
and I have
fascist,
a feeling I know where we're going.
Simplicity. I don't know if you do, but here's what, and I'm going to ask the community for a little tolerance about this, because my family is largely biracial. And I think that's a good thing, okay?
Yeah.
So I, years ago, when I was a young woman, I fell in love with a black man, a labor leader, just in many ways, a terrific guy. In some ways, he had his issues, as we all do, and eventually the relationship did not work out. So I'm asking for a little understanding here. I am a, by nationality, I am a Bielorussian Jew. I am an atheist. And I did, I'm not going to tell you that the way I brought my daughter up was perfect or stellar or would necessarily meet the standards of everybody who listens to your program. But I did the best I could. So
that's
yes,
all anyone can do.
Now, all right, but I want to push back a little bit here because her interactions with her father were somewhat limited just because the nature of his job, and he lived in Pittsburgh and we were down here. But you better believe my daughter knows who Henry Louis Gates is. She knows who Cornel West is. She knows who Harry Belafonte is. She was named after Maxine Waters, all right? However, does that mean that she was as steeped in the black community as I would have preferred and would have been ideal? All right. So I'm pushing back a little because we know other biracial families, and I'm thinking of one in particular. The woman was an advocate for the rights of people with disabilities. Her husband was a leader with the United Mine Workers. They were white people who adopted black children. Now, we can debate that that may not be ideal. However, I'm asking the community to consider this. And I'm not saying everything is equally weighted either. All right? So I'm not saying, I'm not being cavalier and saying white people shall go out and adopt black children. I'm not saying that. However, what I am saying is, that there are a lot of other factors involved here, I hope we would agree, having to do with safety, love, security, an authoritative, not authoritarian, but an authoritative, not laissez-faire parenting style. And these things are important too. And I felt that, and I am not defending Amy Coney Barrett, believe me, I'm extremely concerned about the fascist direction of this country and the impact on people of color and people with disabilities and, you know, really basically anybody who's not in the upper class. But I felt the conversation last night, I'll be very honest with you, I was upset because there are more than ever biracial families are becoming more commonplace and they take all kinds of configurations. And from my vantage point, that's a good thing. Are there problems? Are there challenges? Are some of us not perfect? Absolutely. But I felt compelled, and Bob, you know I rarely call in, but I felt like there has to be a little pushback from the other side that this is something also we should encourage, understanding that you don't want people, their culture misappropriated, you don't want the culture denied, but, you know, people, parents do the best they can. And again, this has nothing really to do with Amy Coney Barrett, but I have never heard on your program before, although it may have taken place before, a real discussion about biracial families and what this means and what people of multicultural backgrounds, their challenges. And Bob, I've told you a little bit about my daughter and some of the things she encountered growing up in West Virginia.
Sure.
And yet I would tell you that I think that on the whole, she's doing well. And the perspective, maybe a little naive, that I raised her with is that you can draw from multiple cultures.
Sure.
Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Yeah, it is.
So I just wanted to throw that out there. And I'd love for people to weigh in. If you think I'm way off base, then hey, Nydia is really naive.
I don't think anybody's going to say that, Nydia. And if I could,
okay.
just by way of dialogue, my point was not to critique the idea of biracial families. I'm much more concerned in this particular instance with questions of because again I want to just lay the groundwork from last night again. She testified that, yeah, there's racism, but that's about
it. I heard it.
But she also said that using that hateful word doesn't create a hostile work environment. And she also just let me finish. And she went so far as to say that that she can't say that there's inherent bias in the judicial system.
Right.
And so the essence of my question is, yes, those children can draw on multiple cultures, but who's going to be there to have the talk with them? Because you know the talk is a very, very real thing.
Absolutely, and that point's well taken, but the conversation, I thought, then became generalized to adoptive families. Now, in my case, my daughter is my biological daughter, but, you know, what would people say then if later in life I had married a white guy and then the two of us are raising my biological daughter? I mean, it's somewhat of an artificial difference there. So I thought that the conversation went from Amy Coney Barrett and your very legitimate issues about the fact is this woman is a racist and a fascist and what are the implications for these children? True. But it then evolved into something much broader. And that's why I wanted to push back, and
okay.
I don't want to belabor it.
Oh, you're not. Like you're not. I love this. Heard. I love this kind of conversation, because conversation between people of good faith on our side is how we solve problems. And I'm not afraid to be critiqued over this. And like I said all along last night, I knew I was on shifting sand and thin ice. And
you said it several times. I heard it.
I may have crossed a line. If I implied that sort of adoption just flat out should not take place, that was not my intent. But I am suspicious.
I am suspicious
in that particular instance of how it came to be.
Okay, and in social welfare circles, this has been an issue of debate for years. This issue of, you know, biracial or black children being adopted by white families, it is not simple. It is very difficult. But I just wanted to push back a little bit because I felt the conversation was being generalized to all situations where the adoptive parents are white And it doesn't always go that way.
Yeah, that was,
I mean,
that was never my intention. Let me ask you, though, because you probably have something closer to expertise than I do. Was there any validity to the concern that I voiced last night? Excuse me, nicotine patch or pouch. I don't know why these damn things make me hiccup, but they do. I'm using fewer of them, though. I'm winning. Was there any validity to my concern that these religiously based adoption agencies are able to impose standards that serve to bar otherwise legitimate adoptive parents from being able to participate in the process?
Oh, well, of course, you know, that's true. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, you brought up last night, gay couples. I mean, this has been somewhat, I think, you know, there've been a lot of lawsuits over this about the ability of gay couples to adopt children. And there's all kinds of data out there that gay couples do very well. And, you know, and I'm generalizing here, but statistics show that when compared to heterosexual couples, actually, the gay couples who have become adoptive parents have produced very well-adjusted children.
Sure.
And yet, because of discriminatory attitudes, this still remains very much an issue. But I'm going to hang up, Bob. I would really love to hear from some of your other listeners who have a different perspective on this, but I just wanted to throw it out there because, you know, I know that your community, our community, supports couples of all different types.
Sure.
You know, I think that, you know, people certainly would not challenge the fact I fell in love with a black man and we had a wonderful child. You know, great. This shouldn't be an issue. Fact is, we're not in a colorblind society. I totally understand that. The fact is, racism is rampant right now. But that doesn't mean that we should discourage biracial couples.
Oh, no. Or, no.
You know.
Absolutely
okay.
not.
Okay. So I'm going to hang up, but I want to hear what other people think. I'm purposely being a little bit provocative because I want to have the conversation.
Well, I appreciate it. Silent R. Lamar wrote in and said he agrees with you 100% and said he agrees with you 100%. So that's a beginning. And at some other point in time, maybe we can extend the conversation. It sounds like you need to get away and I'll let you. But I will just add one more thing. If you have not seen Crystal Good's testimony from today, you know, she being a fellow West Virginian and all, you need to see it, Nydia.
Oh, no, I haven't.
Because one of the things she talks about, things she talks about is having been raised in a biracial family. And it was almost like it was one of those weird little horn moments where the thing we talk about the day before winds up setting up what we see the next day. I sat there with my jaw hanging open.
Clairvoyant, you often are. All right, thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Nydia. Take care.
Hang up.
All right, bye now.
All right.
And that's our dear friend, Nydia. Thanks for the input, Nydia. I really do appreciate it. And again, I'm more than happy. I'm more than happy to be wrong or wrong-ish. And I certainly did not mean for last night's conversation to become one of or be perceived as a suggestion that there shouldn't be biracial. No, 1,000 times no. That is not what I intended at all. I am trying to merge because Scott and Todd both called in at the same time, more or less. I'm trying to get the calls merged. Are you there?
Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, so we got Todd and Scott. That's awesome. A little.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, Scott, how are you tonight?
I'm better than average.
It's a Thursday. It's not a Friday on the front porch. It's a Thursday in the gazebo.
Ooh, the gazebo.
Well, it was that of the veranda.
Will we hear patriotic band music, Bob? Come on.
Yeah, fresh out.
Oh, good. We don't need it. I got to say.
Go ahead.
Well, I just want to.
One of y'all flip a coin. I tell you what, I'll choose. Go, Todd. If you said I just want to, so it sounds like your topic is limited. Go, Todd.
Okay. Yes, I called last night, and it's so funny that I didn't get her name correctly. I don't
Nedia.
Think the last caller.
Nedia.
And this is because, like Lamar says, you know, you get people stimulated intellectually, and it's hard to catch all the points. But this is something that crossed my mind after we talked last night. Now, I'm what they call a high yellow individual, and I was raised. I had the white people in my family, you know, and I've always, dating other people of a different ethnicity doesn't matter to me. It never has. I wasn't brought up like that, but that's different than most Americans. But this is what's important, I think, in my experience, when it comes to this issue with Amy Coney Barrett. Now, I would like to know if some intrepid investigative journalist can find out if either party of this couple, the Barretts, has had a relationship, not a hookup, but a relationship with someone out of their ethnicity, because that is very important. And I understand what Nedia is saying, and that's all well and good in a perfect world. But we must understand that America is one of the most racist modern industrialized countries. And we're very parochial, and we think we're much more liberal than we really are when you just look at the, you know, the evidence. And that's all I want to put on the table. And I'm going to listen to you and Scott have a wonderful conversation, and maybe Nedia will text or email in. Because I think that's something to contemplate.
Well, and I have no doubt that to one degree or another, and I'm not trying to speak for her, but I think based on what Nedia said, she probably dealt with some of that too. And you know the idea that that it became a general discussion of, you know, biracial bad. I don't think I or you or Lamar ever intended for it to go that way. When I was questioning how the Haitian children came to be adopted by a lily white, wealthy family with five kids already or something like that. I don't know where they fall in the birth order. My only question was not to question whether it's okay to place adopted black children with white parents, but when it happens with a family like that, that is deeply tied in with a weirdo religious cult, and I'm not talking about Roman Catholicism, I'm talking about this People of Praise cult, and when those things have power structures and access to corridors of influence and access, then that is what I think should be looked at. Because the Republican, what the Republicans did is by getting out there in front of it and howling, "Ooh, they're going to come after her for being a Catholic." The poor Democrats were, well, I mean, they couldn't say it. They couldn't say a damn thing, even if they wanted to. And I don't know that they wanted to. But bringing one's children into the hearing, I agree with Darlene's note from last night, that was a form of abuse. And it is something shameful.
I can't say it exactly, because now everything is documented. Those kids are going to have to deal with that the rest of their lives, because everything is archived. Everything. And it's something to think about. And,
those kids were pawns on a political chessboard. They were showpieces. They had no business being in that fucking hearing room. I believe in the Hart building, the Hart Senate building.
It was.
They had no business. They were not being considered for a seat anywhere. And they should have been in school or home learning or whatever the fuck they do, okay, first of all. And what is the, you know, nothing against needy people anywhere, Haiti or anywhere else on the world map. But did she not get the fucking memo that there are thousands, millions maybe, of adoptable children and babies in the good old U.S. of fucking A? How the fuck did she land on some poor kid in Haiti who is so far out of his natural
which is part of the inquiry that I was making, or apparently failed to make, namely that my suspicion, and that is all it is, I'm speculating, but they have religious ties into some missionary group in Haiti that probably funnels children out of Haiti and into wealthy homes.
Right.
Well, and see, that's a crime also. Sorry, I didn't mean to step on you, Todd or Bob.
No, but see, that's kind of what we broached on that last night. You see, and I was trying to give the Barretts an out when I recognize that they are serious about their Catholicism, and we all know that Haiti is steeped in Catholicism. So that could be an out. They maybe, you know, some people have, for whatever reason, they want to reach out and help other.
But for instance, the question I was working toward, you just mentioned steeped in Catholicism. Well, Haiti is steeped in a lot of religious tradition. What if, you know, how is she going, how is uber-Catholic mom Amy and uber-Catholic dad Jesse, how are they going to respond when their Haitian children perhaps want to learn a little bit about Vaudan?
Exactly.
Or cemetery.
Can I speak as a former Catholic here, a long lapsed Catholic?
Go right ahead.
I'm no Bible scholar, God knows. I am no Bible scholar, but I know enough of my religious training down at St. Mary's School in Alexandria, Virginia, with the Sisters of the Holy Cross and mean looks in their fucking eyes. I remember enough of my religious upbringing as a Catholic if she is such a good Catholic and a good Christian, how is she not following the example of Jesus? Did Jesus go to the ends of the fucking earth to feed the hungry and to heal the sick and to bring sight to the sightless and bring hearing to the hearingless? No. The people who were drawn to him or who he encountered along the way, those are the people to whom he ministered, if you will. It just burns my fucking ass, Bob, that they not only trotted her out as some fucking example of high judicial principles, but she trooped out her fucking kids, and goddamn Lindsay and Cornholio and all the rest of them up there just reading from their list of talking points with not a thought in the world about reality-based reality 3 weeks out from the fucking election. It made me, I had to dig through my old box of stuff, souvenirs, and get my TWA air sickness bag with a gin rummy scorecard on one side and the instructions on how to use the bag on the other. You know, because when I'm at 34,000 feet hurling my guts out, I want to know who's winning the card game. Okay, I almost used that thing watching this woman and those fucking Republicans. I am just so pissed off. I need to shut up for a minute and calm down.
Well, don't you fret none. You're doing fine. Now, just from a pure comedy standpoint, when you were going through your little litany there of all the things that Jesus gave and did to the people, I thought you might be briefly possessed by the spirit of the dearly departed John Prine and add to your list, give knees to the needy.
That too. Because hip replacement surgery and knee replacement were not available. That technology did not yet exist.
Well, you know, this thing has turned into a thing all of a sudden, because I got you and Todd and Steve on the line, and I don't know who I've got on the stress line. Who's on the stress line?
Hey, Bob, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
It's Megan. How are you?
Hey, Megan, how are you? So, okay, hey. we got Megan, we got Steve, we got Scott, and we got Todd. So let me, if you can hold for just a second, let me back up, because Steve was in before you. Steve, go.
I didn't watch any of the hearings. I don't care. And the reason I don't care is I think it's a waste of time even talking about it, because it's a foregone conclusion, and our focus should be on, as I like to call it, reforming the court, not packing the court. But I'm going to be very honest. I am a little bit furious at hearing some of the shit that I'm hearing tonight. And the reason is because in my church there is a sizable Haitian population.
Okay.
And in fact, one of my very good friends is Haitian.
All right.
Her brother, I believe he goes there fairly frequently to take – one of the things they do is to try to visit schools and orphanages there. And, you know, when I'm hearing what I'm hearing from many is this notion of why is she adopting people from Haiti? And if you've ever studied, and I look, Bob, every time anything cultural or language oriented or whatever, I always assume that you know 99.9% of everything. So, Haiti, if you could name a failed state in the world, the very definition of a failed state, there's probably five at most. Haiti sits firmly ensconced within that five.
Oh, sure. I mean, the metaphor that we use here, I have used for years about what the Republicans want the United States to be, is Haiti with cable.
I thought that was Somalia with cable.
Well, it can be Somalia, depending on my mood.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Bangladesh with cable.
Gotcha. So what I'm hearing is having spoken with my people that I know who are from Haiti, and they would tell you this very freely, that there is no hope for Haiti. There is no hope.
No, no pushback from me on that.
So when I hear people questioning, and look, this woman, you know, and we'll have to talk on the front porch tomorrow about originalism, because I'm having a real problem with, I'm not an originalist. I'm way off the beaten path, as you know from what I wrote tonight and what I've said in the past about, you know, the Constitution, et cetera, and originalism, et cetera. And you'll be shocked when we'll talk tomorrow on the porch. You'll be shocked to hear some stuff from me. And as many issues as I have with her on that stuff, I am disgusted that anyone would question her motives there, particularly given what I know and have heard from people who were born there and left.
Sure. On the other hand, I will not retreat from questioning her motives, because I feel like I have, Steve, a pretty solid understanding of who they are.
Amen.
And who it's they...
When you say they, who do you mean?
I mean the Barretts.
Okay.
Because you don't just walk in off the street to the Federalist Society and say, gosh, I'd like to be a Supreme Court justice, and I'm oversimplifying, and I'm not trying to talk down. These people are groomed, and they are meticulously groomed for fucking years, decades,
okay.
Even.
Okay. Okay. Looking at this as some sort of, and I'm not saying this in a disparaging way. You're looking at this as a, gee, isn't it convenient that this little Eva Braun wants to be on the court, and this is almost inoculating her.
Yes.
From criticism.
Right.
Gee, why is that? Why did that happen? Okay, I get it. Okay.
It goes to some of the other things that I was talking about.
But you, I know, I just want people to understand where I'm coming from and how.
Okay, I do. I think they do, but I just want to add this because it if nothing else, it'll add a layer. It'll add a layer to just how damned wrong I am, or else it'll show maybe that I'm not as crazy as I sound. Bob. Today, when they were bringing the witnesses in to speak on behalf of and against her nomination, I've already referenced that a brilliant woman by the name of Crystal Good from West Virginia gave a stirring biographical account of herself and how she had to go and beg a circuit judge to be allowed to have an abortion because she was underage. And she was profound. And she talked about her kids and her family, and she said, I've got a family that some of the people in this room talk about horribly. And it's fact, because it is a blended and non-traditional family of multiracial character and of multi... She's got a transgender daughter, okay? And she said, and I know that there are people in this room who despise my family, but we're just like any other family. And she was profound. And then they brought in a law clerk of Amy Coney Barrett's, a young woman. And again, it was like something I had said last night came true today. Last night I said, no way did they let Amy Coney Barrett show up for this hearing dressed like women have to dress in these hot shit law firms. And how they have to dress. And how they have to dress.
That's like a Fox anchor, Bob.
And how they have to dress to be a right-wing Supreme Court clerk. And so, almost as if the universe was going, hey, Bob was right. They bring in this young white girl whose makeup is perfect, who is wearing, it is the fashion equivalent of a nun's habit. It's a white blouse with either a black or dark navy blue jacket and, I presume, skirt. And she sat there and talked about how Amy Coney Barrett gave her the confidence to know that she could do more than and it was obvious that she's gone on. You know, she's not some law professor somewhere. She was wearing the uniform of a hot shit giant pyramid scheme law firm.
A woman at a white shoe.
Yeah, who is probably subjected to God only knows what kind of harassment.
Don't even get me started. I could tell you stories.
I have no doubt. But on the other hand, when it came to Amy Coney Barrett showing up for her hearing, she was dressed like what I said last night, like she was on the way to a junior league meeting.
And that hair,
you know, pastel pink, pastel mauve. She was coming more than junior league, coming from the PTA. And so I'm suspicious of everything not because I am suspicious by nature, but because, Steve, I have been taught well to be suspicious. And nothing is accidental with these things. They are absolutely they are choreographed within an inch of their lives.
Steve, I think you're being naive. I think you're
Hello?
Being naive.
Okay,
Fox.
Megan.
Hello?
Megan.
Folks.
Stop.
I was going to say, let
Megan
talk.
Megan, go, Megan.
Megan, talk.
All right. Okay.
I'm going to punch somebody.
I'm listening. Okay. I left the room for a bit to grab my dinner, and I heard the beginning of Edia's call, and then I came back in, and I'm hearing what Todd has to say, and I'm hearing what Bob has to say, and this is my two cents. Okay. I grew up right in the D.C. metro area, first 18 years of my life. So know what I'm talking about when I say I'm seeing both sides here. Okay. When I was listening to Bob last night and he was criticizing her in particular with adopting those two black kids, what I was hearing was this. She comes from a very privileged group. It's not just the fact that she's white in this particular instance. It's the fact she comes from upper class, had the best schools, and comes from a very particular line of thinking. And I hate to say it, but that group, I mean, they're well known in and around D.C. metro area, okay? When they go to adopt children of color, it's seen oftentimes as a fashion accessory, or in the religious types, they're trying to convert them.
Megan, does it matter? Megan, let me ask a question. Does it matter that she's not from D.C.?
Not with what I've seen, because it looks like she's been indoctrinated into that particular group.
Okay.
You can, I mean, if you get into the right groups, like in this case, the Federalist Society, I mean, D.C. is not exactly, there's the groups there, but come on, we deal with people from all over the world. We have embassies and stuff. It's the nation's capital.
But yeah, she was, again, okay, is, just for the sake of background, she was born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana. Her dad was a corporate lawyer for Shell Oil. Her mom was a homemaker. She went off to college. She went to law school. She became a she clerked for Fat Dead Tony. She clerked for somebody else. And then she worked 3 years for a white shoe firm. And then she got a job teaching law at Notre Dame Law School. And from there, okay, in 2017, she was elevated to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, where she took a seat that was originally intended by Barack Obama for a woman of color. But the Republican Senate blocked the appointment so she could make the circuit Lily White.
Okay, well then you're dealing with someone that grew up in a red state, who's right wing, who had looked the part, and oh my God, gee, I'm a country girl in the nation's capital, clerking for Supreme Court. I mean, there are those there. What I'm trying to get at here is that the attitude toward adopting children of color is a bit different for depending on the mindset of those involved. What I'm hearing from media is that she came about it organically. She fell in love with a black man and she had biracial kids, which in and of itself is an uphill battle for being biracial. And, President Obama, I don't have to point out to you guys, he's technically biracial, but we all know how he was treated, okay? So being lumped in with women, I don't think I'm far wrong when I'm saying it. This was seen as part of her missionary work. She's trying to convert, or the attitude was that she's trying to convert, quote-unquote, the savages. Look how well this is how we live the word of the Lord, where we go into these wild, savage places, which tends to, have people of color, and we're taking them into our home, and look, see, we're raising them, in Christ's word and blah, blah, blah. Okay, I've met these people, or these women in particular, that do this. Okay? To lump it all in with women who come about it and generally love other people for who they are and then have kids as a result, I can see where media would get upset. But that wasn't what I was hearing from Bob yesterday, is what I was trying to point out. Now, on the other hand, I've heard from other people of color, and when I say people of color, I don't just mean black people, because I've heard the same thing from Native Americans. They've not had the same representation or been able to stand up as people or even in their own culture without being squashed. So when they see this, all the white people adopting children of color and they're getting applauded, well, there is a very real worry that they're not being brought up in their culture of birth. Well, I can't sit there and tell them that they don't have a right to worry. At the same time, how are you going to talk to women like Nidia who are like, they genuinely love their kids? That's all I was trying to point out.
Okay.
Like, there's, it's, it's a bit more than skin color, but I mean, there's a mindset involved, and I've met different people that have different kind of attitudes, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know, like, I can sit here and point this out from what this is what I see, but I don't know how to bring it together. Like, you know, I can't sit there and say that.
Yeah, you know, I understand, Megan. It's like a stone in your shoe.
Pretty much.
You know, you can feel it, you know, there, and you can't, and at the time, like, you know, let's say you're in a marching band, you can't stop marching and do anything about it. You just have to sit there and feel that stone in your shoe.
Yeah. I mean, and there's not like, there's also the added thing problem where you feel like as a white person, well, I don't want to talk over people of color who are just, you know, trying to be heard. And
no, that's why I felt really. That's why I felt so uncomfortable bringing the issue up last night. And I'm glad that Nadia called in to say that it sounded like it was going from being a specific issue to a more broad issue of, you know, that let's not have biracial families, or let's not have children adopted into, you know, let's have black kids adopted into white families, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
That having been said, if I could, let me just add in a note coming in from Darlene. Subject line, yes, Ames was groomed. And like Bob, I also question her motives. Those six of her seven children should never have been in that hearing room. Please do not forget they left the Down syndrome child home, probably because that child would not have been able to sit there obediently hour after hour after hour like the other children have been disciplined to do. That youngest child would have distracted from Ames, who mockingly stated at one point that she was not going to be some sort of queen there on the SCOTUS, which I took as a subtle shot at Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think Darlene's right. And the other thing that she did is someone complimented her on how well-behaved her children were, and she said, I have eyes in the back of my head. And Darlene continues and says, the two kids from Haiti strike me as Ames and Jesse carrying out their missionary fantasies. I'm happy the children were adopted, but I am suspicious of the parents' underlying motives in doing so. Yeah, definitely choreographed, because the Down syndrome child, remember, was not permitted to be there. To me, Ames and Jesse strike me as being very strict parents that won't think twice about brainwashing their children. Or God alone knows what else. I added that part.
May I say
well,
that?
And then please.
Megan, okay. Megan, finish, then Todd.
Go ahead.
No, Megan, Todd.
I guess the million-dollar question is, how do you deal with women like Nadia who have biracial families, or, God forbid, they adopt a child who's not of their race, you know, and they're just trying to love that kid, but still the question of being brought up in that culture is continually brought up. I mean, I'm not saying that, like, I know the motives between media and ACB are different, but this always seems to be the question, because they're coming at it from two different, totally different directions. I'm sorry, Todd, go ahead.
Well, don't be sorry. I think that you're adding texture to this conversation, needed texture. And, you know, I don't know if everyone heard what I said last night. I gave afforded every opportunity of an out to this couple. That's why I said, well, they're steeped, you know, and let's remember, steeped in Catholicism, but let's remember why Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. It is solely because they had the audacity to pull themselves away and do their own thing early on, and they have always been subjugated and shit on ever since then because they deem themselves to be free. And we can't have no free goddamn black people in the Western Hemisphere. That's just the fucking truth.
Colony, weren't they?
Yes.
That's why they speak French. Right. But they revolted, and they repelled everyone else. No one could take them back over. And of course they've been corrupt. This is why we have Papa Doc Trump. He's turned our country into a shithole country. But that's the background. I guess everyone doesn't understand that. Otherwise, we might not be having this conversation. But that's the background. But anyway, what I'm trying to say, and maybe people didn't hear it last night, in my professional experience, this is common in many professions, as Megan has intimated, or not even intimated, outright said, especially in social sciences. I've seen it up close and personal. And, you know, it's the textbooks are replete with these instances where folks will adopt children as almost like zoo animals to study them and further their career.
Or trophies.
In other words,
Or trophies.
Exactly.
Or as avatars to prove their bona fides.
And you see, now I want to tap into something that Lamar said. We need to pay attention. And once again, because we got to really put her under scrutiny now with some of her decisions, because she really should have waited. If she were really a person of substance, she would have waited till after the election. She would have not accepted. But that shows that she's on a mission. She is on a mission. She doesn't need the money. You know, you don't have seven, adopt all those children, have, you know, if she needed the money. It's not about the money. It's not. And we have to understand who and what the federal society is. I know it's just a term, but Bob has done a great job explaining that. But I'm trying to be succinct because other people need to talk. But this is a thing. Just like I was saying last night with the Haitian nannies, that is a thing. It is what it. I mean, we might not want it to be that way, but
like it's become a fashion.
Pardon me.
I said, you mean it's become a fashion, like a trend?
It's a trend because, for a lot of reasons, there's white guilt, there's cheap labor, and they tend to work out pretty well. And it's they got the je ne sais quoi because they speak French. And they speak English.
Well, you know, see, this is running alongside what Billable Rick just wrote. Barrett's grooming for Supreme Court, the Manchurian justice. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Barrett wasn't coached on how to structure her life so as to maximize her chances of being named to the Supreme Court, such as to adopt Haitian children to inoculate herself against allegations of racism. Barrett's frumpy attire also speaks to her religious piety. She almost appears to be Amish based on her dress. No. Didn't even look a little bit Amish. She was wearing something besides black. But
he's talking about what we talked about with the frock. That's the first time we saw her with the brown frock.
Yeah.
Thing is, like Bob is saying, with this Federalist Society, nothing that you see is left to chance. In other words, this is stagecraft of the highest order. This is Roger Ailes level stagecraft. It's designed that the people watching who are not watching with any level of discernment or wisdom or intelligence, they don't see beyond what they're being shown. But to those who can look deeper, higher and deeper, they know what the deal is. It's, you know, a Haitian adopted child. Yeah, that's one of the bullet points on the checklist. You know, it's just we are being so manipulated. I dare say that there, out of every 100 people in America, there's hardly a handful of people who know what the fuck is going on in terms of the level of manipulation and stagecraft that's, and you said earlier, Bob, this shit goes back to Reagan. In his own way, he was a puppet of this type of manipulation. You know, what was his purpose? Well, his purpose was, you know, look what they've done. Now, here I am riding in on my white horse with my cowboy hat and my six gun, and we'll fix it. You know? And he did what he did for 8 years. And then Daddy Bush came along, who was of the same mindset, but way more corrupt. I mean, you don't want a former head of the fucking CIA as the president of the United States. People, you don't want that. That's going down a very scary and dangerous path, you know? And then Clinton came along, and he too, I think, was manipulated. He was, what was the name of that new Democratic organization?
DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council.
The DLC, just a different flavor of stagecraft and manipulation.
No, that was born of Democrats being sick and tired of having their asses handed to them because they couldn't raise money like the Republicans could. So they made some connections inside Wall Street, and they got themselves some of that sweet, sweet Wall Street money.
Well, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
In terms of the stagecraft and the manipulation. And then, you know, we had our 8 years of Clinton, and it came time to bring along Bush the Jr. for 8 years. And we know
I don't think we do it on this their side quite like they do, because they have so much more to hide and so much more to inoculate against. It's not that long ago that we had the confirmation hearings of Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor. And those two women came across as their confirmation process was nothing like this stage managed piece of vaudeville that we got both with Amy Coney Barrett and with Brett Kavanaugh. Because again, those two women could stand on their own reputations. They had real careers. Okay? All Brett Kavanaugh had ever been was a cheesy little flack for the Republican Party, up to and including being Renfield to Ken Starr's Dracula. Okay?
Yep.
And then he was a political hack inside the Bush White House. And then, boom, he's on the D.C. circuit. And of course, the PR machine is going overtime. I mean, the smoke coming off of it. Talking about what a legal genius he is, when there's nothing genius about him. He's just an ideologue theocrat.
All right, Bob, can I just jump in real quick?
Yeah, go ahead, Megan.
About something you said earlier about people getting upset about, I don't know, what was it, Kagan or Sotomayor that said that the Supreme Court could benefit from a wise Latina?
Yeah, that was Sonia Sotomayor.
Okay. There's a reason why, like, we have diversity initiatives, especially in some government agencies. And that is because there are certain things or perspectives that are desperately needed in our government. And what she meant by that was, she grew up in a certain way and had to face certain experiences that I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say people that look like me haven't had to experience. And if you're in a dominant institution that's basically determining the lives of other people in this country, you're going to want all those perspectives. And I didn't take offense to that. So when people get hopping mad about stuff like that, I'm just looking at them like, what the hell? Because I don't think they understand this. It's like all of a sudden they get pissed off like, well, my perspective as a, you know, fill in the blank person doesn't matter. No, it's because, well, for example, we complain about all the crap the FBI has done, I don't know, in the 50s and 60s or the whole run of when J. Edgar Hoover was at the head of it. Well, look at the culture at the time. Look at who they were hiring and who the majority of their employees were. And there you have your answer. Well, the FBI is saying they have diversity initiatives. Well, there's a freaking reason for that. So why not have that? I mean, there's a reason why we celebrate having X number of women in Congress or X number of Black people or Native Americans, fill in the blank. There's a reason for it. It's because we need those perspectives.
Because they are profoundly and classically and historically underrepresented.
Well, they're not just that they're underrepresented, but because I don't know when you said it, something about that they, about the, oh, you said earlier in the program about law and those who dole out justice need to have the experiences of those the people that come in front of them. Well, duh. I mean, we're seeing this playing out right now with the whole police brutality thing. Well, it's easy for a white man who's part of the KKK to just dole out violence when his ass is never going to be on the receiving end of it. Okay? So, I mean, there's a reason we're asking for that, and it's not just, you know, to make the institutions of power look like a United Colors of Benetton ad. And when people start complaining
great
about...
Great reference.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, but I mean, there's a reason. Well, why does it have to be black? Well, they're bringing with them a whole host of experiences that need to be there. And I can't help but wonder if a majority of the cops were black, would this crap still go on? Is it the culture we need to look at? Or is it the fact that you're bringing in people that have a troubling mindset towards other people?
Well, Megan, think about what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said. Someone asked her, when will there be enough women on the court, on the Supreme Court? And she said, when there are nine. And people, they gasped, what? Because, you know, clueless, the court has been comprised of nothing but old white men for the vast majority of the time that it's been in existence. Look what a great job they did. Thanks for Plessy. Thanks for Dred Scott. Thanks for the slaughterhouse cases. Again, thanks for Lochner. But the fact of the matter is the
consequences of those, were they?
But the fact of the matter is, Megan, now, and don't think for a minute that this is not within the consideration of the Republican Party, they have made sure that there will not be another Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the court for a long damn time. John Roberts is a young'un. The oldest people on the court are Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, and Sammy Bad Breath shoot the black kid in the back of the head at 30 yards away, Alito.
Okay, well, unfortunately, Bob, I think with this rush nomination and this rush to make Amy Coney Barrett like the next Ruth Bader Ginsburg, only on the conservative side, they're also increasing the backlash against this crap.
Oh, sure. That's what I said when I remarked that they really don't understand how dangerous what they're doing is.
Correct.
Because again, I go back to the words of John Kennedy, those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. And frankly, having a Supreme Court that is comprised for the next 50 fucking years of a bunch of cranky old white people, for the most part, is not good for, it's not a good harbinger for the future of this nation.
No, because if we win those elections, term limits might be a very real possibility.
Well, you'd have to amend the Constitution for that. It is far easier for Congress to exercise its absolute right under the Constitution to determine the size of the court. Make it 15.
Isn't it? I've got a question, and I want to just run this premise by you and Megan both, and Todd too, if he's still on the line. Aren't we at a point where, on some level, there are some Republicans who know that a growing number of people are on to what they're up to and have been up to for a good long while? Isn't there a heightened degree of recklessness and not frustration, but desperation, recklessness and desperation on the moves that they've been making? I mean, you look at the fact that Trump, out of what, 17 or 18 GOP primary candidates in 2016, he ended up the nominee and ended up the fucking president. I mean, doesn't that smack of recklessness and desperation when things have gotten so bad that they've got to trot out the likes of him? and in the case of Coney Barrett, the likes of her. I mean,
definitely afraid. I'm sorry, but this reeks of, like, you know, why have you been winning the last 4 years? Y'all have been acting like scared, angry, cornered rats. I mean, what good reason is there for maggots to randomly harass people who are protesting for Black Lives Matter? Why would you get in a car and run someone over in the middle of a protest against this little Nazi crap group that decided they were going to come out of hiding in Charlottesville? I mean, if y'all are winning so much, why would you act like that? I have people, yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've run into giant signs, huge Trump flags, like a gabillion of friggin' Trump campaign signs, not only just Trump, but like every Republican running. It can't just be one sign. It has to be like five of them on the lawn plus a flag. If y'all are winning so much, why are you acting like that? Because this just looks like you're fronting because you're scared.
Well, let me throw a couple of things out there. One of them is this. There is, as the old saying goes, more than one way to skin a cat. I like cats. Don't send me emails about cat skinning. On the one hand, it is completely within Congress's constitutional purview to set the size of the Supreme Court. The Congress could find, for instance, that the current Supreme Court is utterly divorced from any representation of what America really looks like, and could say we need to increase the size of the court to 15, and Joe Biden's the president, and there's Democratic majority in both houses, so we appoint an indigenous person. We appoint a woman of color. Finally, we appoint a person who's non-religious. Oh, I'm going to faint. And, you know, three more people. Okay? And that's completely okay. Or there, but again, yeah. There's more than one way. You can go to John Roberts and you can sit down and say, because this is how power politics is played. And I think I mentioned this a few nights ago. Maybe it was on the front porch. You go to John Roberts and you say, nice budget you got there. Be a shame if something happened to it. And you explain to him that John Old Egg, you know that this body is not even remotely representative of the broad of the breadth of human experience in this country. What needs to happen is you need to go and tell Slappy Pubes on the Coke Can Thomas, it's time to fucking go. And you can tell that to Sammy Alito while you're at it. And John, you might want to think about going too. And you get three resignations for the good of the court, and bang, you can appoint the first woman of color to occupy a Supreme Court seat. The first indigenous American to fill a Supreme Court seat, and the first non-believer who can look at the Senate and say, good for y'all, believe what you want, but we're finally going to have somebody on the court who isn't going to be beholden to any religious tradition. Yay me. And you can solve the problem that way, too. And that means that the Republicans are preserved in their opportunity to fuck America some more. Because eventually, Kagan and Sotomayor, and particularly Breyer, will feel the urge to step down. And you haven't had to amend the Constitution, and you haven't had to listen to a bunch of pissing and moaning from the court, and you wind up with a tasty little 6-3 majority, and Amy Coney Barrett and Brat and Ann's boy Neil get to shut the fuck up for the rest of their unnatural, miserable, misbegotten lives. Sometimes it's fun thinking like things like that. Going back to the Queen reference, I had another note from Darlene in Connecticut. The Queen reference was laughable because that's exactly what Ames wants to be, a queen on the SCOTUS. But she knows deep down that she will never, ever replace RBG. And I will add editorially, because she's never going to do the kind of big change, systemic rights expansion that Ruth Bader Ginsburg did. Amy Coney Barrett's not interested in that. She's a conservative. She's interested in the contraction of rights, the regression away from growth. And so Darlene also asks, so, who was home taking care of their child with Down syndrome? Ames never credited anyone else with helping them care for the children outside of herself and her husband. You know, if it weren't for the fact, I'll add editorially, if it weren't for the fact that we know that the Federalist Society choreographs this shit down to the second, I'd almost dare think that she's probably got some off-the-books help, if you know what I mean. And if that shit had ever come to light, that would have been the end of her nomination. But anyway, if they had extended family members helping them, I think Ames would have thanked them publicly at the hearing. And I'd like to thank my dear, dear mother or my sainted sister. The fact that she gave no credit to anyone outside of herself and her husband makes me wonder, who are those caregivers? And what are their demographics? I hate to go there, but... But it's okay to go there.
The women like that go to great lengths to preserve the image that, you know, of the saintly mother.
Yeah, they're super women. They're super moms, and they're doing it all themselves when it is impossible that it can be done. And Darlene reminds us, don't forget, Michelle Obama needed her mother to live with them at the White House to help her and Barack with Sasha and Malia. Just two kids. In her memoir, Becoming, she made no bones about the fact that she desperately needed her mother's help. But in the Republicans' warped, racist, sexist minds, Michelle wasn't white superwoman enough like Ames is. I totally agree with Rick, by the way. That's why I wrote in the other night that I want to see the Federalist Society manual on how to become a U.S. Supreme Court justice. I think the Barretts are hiding a lot. That's a cowbell for Darlene for all of that.
Didn't Precious Lindsay even brag about it in his capacity as the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee? He just patted him. I'm imagining they're putting Ben Gay all over his shoulders from reaching back and patting his own back about what we did. What we did this week. We a woman of faith who openly proclaimed who she was. And pro-life. This is the first time in history that we have, come up with a nominee saying soon to be Associate Justice who's done all that. Ain't we great? Ain't we grand? With her fucking seven kids. In today's world, who has seven kids? Does she live on a farm? I don't know, Bob. I just get so frustrated watching this. You know, having a ringside seat, watching my big screen TV, the best seat in the house, to watch the parade of lunacy that continues, and it's endless. It's not like the Macy's Day Parade that has a beginning and a middle and an end. You know, this shit is just endless. It's nonstop. And can I throw in a very quick TV viewing tip? The other day I noticed on Amazon Prime Video that they just added the miniseries that was on Showtime, The Loudest Voice, about Roger Ailes, that's based on the book by Gabriel Sherman, The Loudest Voice in the Room. Any of you who have Amazon Prime Video, sit down and commit to watching this miniseries, and it will make your blood run cold, especially in the light of these past 4 years with Trump as president, and in the light of this circus that we just saw in terms of this nominee to be put on the court for the next, 30, maybe 40 years, given modern medicine and her age. We're in for a hell of a ride. And I you know, I'm going to shuffle off this coil way before it's over, I think. I was joking with myself the other day. If somehow Trump manages to get another 4 years, I'm taking off my mask and picking up my Territon 100s. I'm going to start smoking again and licking public doorknobs.
Well, don't you say that. Remember, I'm day 31. Don't discourage me.
I know, Bob. I know. And you know me. I'm kind of joking. But that's how bleak 4 years ahead of us will be if this asshat is given another 4 years in office. That's how much I don't want to see it happen. You know? But anyway, I know we just
kind of breezed past it, but I really do think someone should investigate his claim of having ordered the execution of an individual who had not even been charged with a crime. That's fucking serious. But Darlene has given an LOL to you, Scott. LOL, Lindsey Graham and rubbing the Bengay on his back. That's hilarious, Scott. Good one. Well. So you get a cowbell for that. And Lindsey, by the way, got himself in some deep shit today.
Good.
Because in one of the breaks, he went out and sought a microphone and started begging for money inside the Capitol. That's a giant no-no. But even more of a no-no was what he did last night, or what he did yesterday during the hearing. Because you know he's a smartass, and he thinks he's quick, and he thinks he's cute. And so during the hearings, he said, "Now, you can ask anybody who wants to go back to the good old days of segregation, blah, 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 blah."
Did he actually say that word for word?
Yes, the good old days of segregation.
Yeah.
And Jamie Harrison was on him like a duck on a June bug. And so then Lindsey got all aggrieved and said, "I can't imagine anybody would think I actually meant that. I was clearly being sarcastic."
Bullshit.
Somebody get me a Darvon and a margarita. I'm about to have a go into convulsions, I swear. But no.
Well, what the fuck are we supposed to think when it was said that, or Amy Coney Barrett doesn't believe that any settled Supreme Court case in the past is actually settled law, including the Brown versus Board of Education?
Well, no, so, okay, that's a great point. That's a great point, Megan, because, you know, she said, "Well, I consider Brown
to be a super precedent because I can't imagine anyone trying to reinstitute segregation."
And the minute, and just because I'm me, the first thing I thought was, I want to call a couple of my buddies who follow legislation down on Goat Hill in Montgomery, Alabama, and see just how many bills reinstituting segregation had just been reintroduced. Because I mean, that's a hold my beer moment.
Statues?
I'm sorry, what?
I said the fact that they're viciously defending Confederate statues and we can't erase history and BLM and Antifa are just going to, like, what? Do they think we can't connect the dots here about what they really want? For God's sake, 19 years ago, I went to visit a friend in Atlanta, Georgia on 4th of July week, and there were friggin' white dudes in their pickups flying both the American flag and the Confederate flag.
Oh, sure.
And I was told later, that's a symbol of the Klan. And I'm like, it's all over the damn place in Atlanta. That was 19 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine it's gotten much better.
Megan, can I ask you a question? You alluded to your upbringing in the D.C. area. I was born and raised in Alexandria. I'm older than you, I'm sure. It's always good to hear from the home area. And that you're raising hell and asking hard questions. And being active. That's what I love about my D.C. people. You know? Because we know...
Oh, shout out to you, Scott.
Within the Beltway, if you grew up within the Beltway and paid attention as a kid or a teenager or whatever, you know what the fucking deal is. And you know what they're up to. And we need more of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been really, like, the last 4 years have really just upped my blood pressure because I hear people, like, not getting or understanding, and I feel like I have to be, you know, a translator 24/7. Like, this is what they're really doing, but they don't, they look at you blankly and they say point blank, they don't believe you. So I'm sitting here, like, trying to convince people, no, you can't sit this election out, no, COVID is not a fraud. You know, this is what's coming out of the mouths. Well, and they're arguing over what was said. I'm like, this is what they mean. And you're trying to translate. And they're sitting here like, no, but that's not what he said. I don't think it's that. I'm like, I don't know how to explain to people, like, genuinely, like, I was trying to tell this about Trump because my mom had some friends, went up to Atlantic City, and she actually met him. And because I had two parents in the car business, I knew right off the bat, he's a con man. He's the idiot that tries to sell you the junker and tries to convince you that they fixed it all up. No, they didn't. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to tell people this 4 years ago, and it was like trying to, I don't know, transport water with a sieve. It didn't work.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, no, he's going to be great. He's going to do this. I'm telling you, he's all for show. He's like that damn kid in class and growing up. That he's bragging that he can do all this crap, and you know for a fact he can't. And when all the kids in the class, like, they'll sit there and defiantly lie to your face, even when they all prove wrong. Or they'll demand proof, and he'll just come up with some bullshit excuse. And I'm sitting here like, and here we go again. And I'm sitting here like, it's just, it gets exhausting. Like, I don't know, do I need to go around with a bullhorn? I don't know how else to get... I don't know how else to, like, get through. Yeah.
You know, 3 years ago was the last time I went back to the Philadelphia area. And I stayed in Atlantic City because that's where my best lives in that area. And, you know, mm-hmm. So we went to Atlantic City. And let me keep this quick. Trump Tower is an abandoned mania. It's a disgrace. It sits there. Mm-hmm. The trash blows around it. It's disgusting. And our country is just like that. It has just been hollowed out. This is where we are because that's who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot convince mm-hmm. these people. They are, you know what? It's almost like the Matrix. They're zombies. There's nothing, like you said, you just said it, nothing you can say. You present them with facts and it just does not register. So I've given up on these people. There's mm-hmm. no point in wasting any energy. If you have to explain to someone what is going on now, they will never get it. I'm so done with that. Bob was on that train early on. That's why he doesn't accept maggot callers, because he doesn't want to pollute his program with nonsense. He doesn't want to even give them an avenue, an outlet.
Right,
and,
right.
You know,
it's like...
And you're bringing some good points to the table. And Steve, I'm not trying to hurt your feelings. And I said, I think you're being naive. That's just my observation. I think I'm the only one black in this conversation. And like mm-hmm. I said, I don't know if I said this or not, but, you know, both my grandmothers were white. You know, so mm-hmm. it's not like I don't, you know, I travel through all types of circles. And I hear things. I see
right.
things. And I'm trained in human behavior. So, I like to think I know what I'm talking about. And the Haiti
right.
thing is different. It is, and like you said, it's a showpiece. It's a showpiece because only the elite. You know, you look at how hard it is to adopt kids.
Right. Right. I mean, it's a little dicey because I've seen it, I've seen it be like a fashion trend or that certain groups have to check off all these boxes. On the other hand, Todd, please take this in the spirit that's given. Like, when I say... You know, I'm not trying to be, oh, I have a black friend. Well, my brother is, you know, my brother's like me. He's white, but all of his girlfriends have been black. So there's a good chance that I could have a black sister-in-law. I could have a biracial niece or nephew. So, I mean, I don't know how to explain, like, I just lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. I mean, I understand where Nydia is coming from, where she gets upset. Like, she doesn't want to be lumped in with the Amy Coney Barrett of the world. I mean, she fell in love with a guy who happened to be black. And
I don't think,
I mean,
we
if I'm going to sit there, right. I'm just saying, like, I think this is, Bob was coming at it from one side. And I'm just saying, I've seen that. But Nydia is coming at from the other side where she's like, well, you know, there's a good possibility, like, maybe, you know, how do you have those conversations with your kids when you desperately want them to be safe? It's not a showpiece for you. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
absolutely.
You know, God forbid if I have a biracial niece or nephew, how am I as an aunt going to handle that? Like, you know, it's not lost even on me as a white person. When I see, like, you know, Jacob Black, oh, he was shot in the back 7 times. Well, in the police afterward, oh, well, he had a knife in his car. Well, Kyle Rittenhouse was allowed to walk, you know, prance to another state with a gun and kill 2 people. Something's wrong there.
Yeah, update on that, by the way. He will not be charged with anything having to do with the gun in Illinois because apparently the gun was kept in Wisconsin. What the fuck? But
there was no register in Illinois. But I'm like, why aren't the parents being brought up on charges?
Well, there's that, too. And thanks to Ralphs, who's serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department this evening. Apparently, we have all been engaged in a giant sexist exercise. Because an author over at Medium, who writes for something called Gen, G-E-N, says that it's sexist to ask questions, and it would be illegal for senators to ask questions about her giant family. But the thing is, the article raises more questions than it answers. And she says that it's sexist because no one ever asks about how men with children manage their careers. Well, I think that's pretty obvious because we live in a sexist society and it is simply assumed that they didn't raise the children.
Well, that and why
just
was
like
the
Amy,
fact that
just like
she was
just like Ames
asked about her 7 kids.
Oh no, she wasn't asked about them, but she constantly talked about them and was encouraged to talk about them. But nobody else could ask anything about the gaping holes, like who's taking care of them, how many nannies do you have, how many housekeepers do you have, a cook? No, that's off limits. But we live in a sexist society, and that's why it isn't asked of men, because it's assumed that they were, and frankly, she comes from that kind of a home. Her dad was a corporate lawyer for Shell, and her mother was a stay-at-home mom, what used to be called a homemaker. But
in a home where that one income was enough to do that.
The couple of things I did learn along the way is she didn't start having kids until she was 27 and out of law school. And out into the world.
Huh.
Her husband is a lawyer, too. He's an actual practicing lawyer, whereas she's an ivory tower type.
Well, are they married before they had kids? Or was that, like, right after the marriage? Good question. Was she able to take birth control and do family planning?
Oh, gosh. She's going to hell if she did.
Not if she was a good Catholic. An observant, I mean, straight down the line, A to Z, good Catholic.
But the fact of the matter is, a law professor at Yale is now saying that her place on the court is going to actually cripple, that's the headline term, cripple the pandemic response. John Fabian Witt, a Yale law professor, writing in the New York Times, said, for centuries, American constitutional law granted state governments broad public health powers. Salus populi, Salus populi suprema lex, the old saying went, the health of the people is the supreme law. Such authority went back to the beginning of the Republic. In the famous 1824 case of Gibbons versus Ogden, Chief Justice John Marshall defended the acknowledged power of a state to provide for the health of its citizens. States, he explained, were empowered to enact inspection laws, quarantine laws, and health laws of every description. The reasoning, he wrote, carried through to generations of judges who generally either left public health matters to the states. So he gets to the heart of the matter, saying this month a bare majority of 4 Republican-appointed justices on the Michigan Supreme Court struck down the state's 75-year-old emergency powers law as an unlawful delegation of legislative power to the executive. Last month, a federal district judge in Pennsylvania appointed by President Trump struck down the state's business closure rules and its limits on gatherings. The judge in the case, William Stickman, revived hoary ideas about freedom of contract and laissez-faire economic policy that once led the courts to strike down protective labor legislation like wage and hour laws. In other words, that judge was going straight back to Lochner. And so Witt says the U.S. Supreme Court may soon do the same. We may be defaulted into herd immunity because of people like Amy Coney Barrett, who think that God favors the elect and the rest of us are just window dressing. But it's been a fantastic conversation. Todd, Scott, Steve, Megan, I appreciate all of you. I thank you very kindly, but I got to get out of here. I've just found out that I've got Bob Kincaid amateur Uber driver work to do. So that having been said, I want to thank you all, and I want to thank everybody who keeps the program on the air. We finished the evening at $155 to go in fundraising. That means that tomorrow the goal will be $355 to finish the week. And dear God, I hope we're not talking in the next week or so about the funeral of Dianne Feinstein. Flavio and Jug of Punch both pointed out to me that, my God, at the end of the hearing today, Dianne Feinstein went up and hugged a maskless Lindsey Graham, who's been LARPing and smolicking and grabulating and lollygagging and spraying and spewing and coughing and hacking and hooting all over his Republican colleagues, especially Mike Lee, who fucking has the disease. Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. So, again, thanks, everybody. Thanks to our subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, over at headon.live, the best place to listen to the Malloy program. Thanks to Ben Birch, whiteroseSociety.org. Ben does a lot that nobody ever knows, including fixing things when I break them on the archive. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Please stay home. Across the Midwest, my God, the disease is roaring. Wisconsin has doubled its cases something like in a week. They had to set up a pop-up hospital in the last couple of days in Wisconsin. Please stay safe. If you have to be out, wear your mask, wear your gloves, wash your hands, use your hand sanitizer, carry some hand sanitizer with you. Maintain your social distance, make your social, you know how the submarine commander says, helmsman, make your depth 200 fathoms. Or whatever, 200 meters, I don't know. Well, Horn family, make your distance 20 feet. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying that they've got some tapes of Hunter Biden they got from some guy in Delaware, avoid that person like the plague. Because they are. Later, y'all.